You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 28th of February. Howell Neto, how valuable is he? Usage rate, how important is that? A playoff update after last night's events and a great basketball watching night in the NBA. It's all coming up on this Wednesday edition of Locked On Jazz. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Hope you are super. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, hopefully look behind the curtain on a daily basis. Hope everything's great. Today's show is brought to you by The Store and Murdoch Chevy. I also want to give a shout-out. Grip 6 has renewed as an advertiser on the Locked On Podcast Network, actually stretching out past just Locked On Jazz and into the Locked On Podcast Network. They have a brand-new website. Looks cool. Promo code is LOCKED if you want 20% off there. So just a shout-out. They also have new women's and kids' belts. So just get a little shout-out to our friends over there, Utah companies expanding and getting a little bigger and really proud of them and glad to be a part of it. Let's get to the show. Trying to dig in a little bit on what might ail the Jazz a little bit. And there's a weird one that kind of keeps coming back. And that is the play of Howell Neto. Now, Howell Neto is an undersized point guard who gets taken advantage of every now and then on the defensive end because he's simply not big enough. He's not got great one-on-one moves. He's not a bona fide scorer. He's not playing above the rim. But somehow, this team is dramatically better when Howell Neto is on the floor. So, like, why is truly the weirdest part about it. So let's look into it. And is it possible that Howell Neto's sprained ankle at shoot-around the other day is part of the reason this team's not playing as well offensively? A true point guard who moves the basketball, distributes, makes an awful lot of shots, doesn't take very many, but when they, or makes a very, very high percentage of shots. So far this year, when Neto's on the floor, the Jazz shoot 47% compared to 45% when he's on the bench. It's weird. They shoot 39% compared to 37%. And they outscore their opponents per 48 minutes by the score of 108-95. And when he's off the floor, they get outscored. Okay, he's only played 434 minutes, and this does not mean that Howell Neto should be starting. This is what I've actually, this is probably the biggest thing that I've learned over the years with analytics where I was wrong. Is that, okay, I used to look at this and then say, all right, well, that clearly means this guy should start and play more. No, I think it means he's incredibly valuable to the team in the role he's used in. Now, and that whatever the other thing we do at that time might not be as good would be a fair assessment. So that, you know, sometimes your value is based on the alternative. The alternative for us, we'll dig into in a second, is often having Donovan on the floor as the point guard instead of Ricky Rubio. And some of our stuff has been a little off on that recently. We'll check the numbers. Last time I checked, that was the case. So when Neto's on the floor, the corner three shooting is better. That's probably because of Neto. And the above the break shooting is better. It's a weird little thing, but you wonder now when you look at that and say, okay, well, it's not a lot of minutes a night. I mean, it's 12 minutes a night. But in those 12 minutes, if we're suddenly, instead of being plus three, we're minus two, then 7-point games and 9-point games look a lot differently than they would otherwise. I mean, is it really possible that Neto is that valuable? Yeah, it actually probably is. listening to David Griffin in a Zach Lowe podcast. He was talking about Fred Van Vliet. He was talking about Matthew Dellavedova. He was characterizing his undrafted point guards are just tough and kind of use toughness to get whatever they want. That to some extent, you as a player have little choice but to play along with those guys. In other words, if you're out on the floor with the likes of Howell Neto, maybe Royce O'Neal plays into this, that you have no choice but to play incredibly hard. It's an interesting thought. I don't want to overplay this one too much, but I do think that those backup point guard moments are somehow having an impact on this team a little bit. I mean, I guess the simplest thing is just like, what's our record when he plays versus when he doesn't play, rather than just plus minus. I haven't looked at that. I will do it now. And the problem with Howell is he plays so hard, he gets hurt all the time. But when Howell has missed, not played, 3-2, 3-3, 3-4, 4-3, and then a long stretch, and then hasn't played since the break, so that would have him as 5-5 except for the long stretch. In the long stretch, we went 1, 2, 3, 4 wins. Sorry, I should have done this beforehand, but I didn't. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 losses. So when Howell Neto doesn't play, we're 9-16. Wow. Ricky Rubio on the floor with versus Donovan Mitchell on the floor. We have been better when it's just Donovan and not Ricky, right, for the season. The win streak included, we've been far better when Rubio's on the floor. So we have a considerable change in numbers over the last 15 games. When Rubio and Mitchell have been on the floor together, we're plus 16 over the last 15 games. When Rubio's off the court, Donovan has to play point guard. And actually, I really should have Neto off the floor here as well. Because the point is, what happens when Donovan plays point guard? So let me fix this. So when Rubio is and Neto are off the floor, and Donovan's on the floor, we're just plus 6. When we never have both Rubio and Neto on the floor at the same time, but the other guys' numbers are much better during that time period. The impact on Donovan, I think, is becoming more noticeable. When Rubio and Neto are off the floor this year, and Donovan has to play point guard, over the last 15 games, he's shooting just 39% and 38% from three. Okay. If I eliminate the 15 games and we start to look at it as a season, and now, you know, we're going to do some math live on the air here. Donovan is at 44% and 36 from three. He's 44%, 36% from three. Let's go back to the filter I had on it, which was random. I mean, it could be the last 20 games, but last 15 is the most I can take on just taking a game note. He's suddenly at 39% and 37.5% from three. So, you know what? He really was much higher before. The contrast is suddenly getting to be pretty extreme. I think if I take, I don't know, I'm going to guess, I'm going to split that in difference and take the last 8 games, and it's 39 and 30% for Donovan when Rubio or Neto are off the floor. And the team as a whole is not as good either. Since the All-Star break, take the 3 games we've played, 1 and 2, now we're dealing with a very small sample size. However, and Donovan has not been terrific, what I'm trying to show is the impact of Neto being hurt is that Donovan has to play point guard. When Donovan's at point guard, his last three games, he's 39% and 25% from three. He's not as good an offensive player, and there isn't, without Joe Johnson or Rodney Hood, a natural other player to go get the ball to help him out. So in a weird way, because of multiple dynamics, the way Quinn uses him, his value, the Neto situation is injury is actually impacting the Jazz. And I think that's one of those subtle ones that probably every team has, but nobody's walking. I mean, the Thunder are having a little bit with Andre Robertson right now. It might not be a subtle, but no one's walking around right now and saying, oh, well, because of the fact that Neto's out, they're only 9-16 when Neto doesn't play. But the trickle-down effect of it is that suddenly Donovan's playing point guard, and we just showed you that Donovan, after kind of handling it pretty well and being okay at point guard for the start of the year, at least individually, and the team's not great either, and those numbers, I could run through those numbers if you want me to. I'm assuming you don't, because the point is, I think, proven. That after starting the year pretty strong in these circumstances, not only is the team not as good, but Donovan isn't, and then you take Rodney and Joe out and don't have a natural scorer that comes back in for him, and it gets a little worse. So, I mean, Donovan has dropped from 45 at point guard, shooting 45%, to even during this streak of wins, down to 40%. It's a big drop. The other guys on the floor in this 15-game period of time, when Donovan's in without Rubio or without Neto, Joe Ingles is shooting 45% from three, which is good, 44% overall. Crowder's at 32%. Royce O'Neal's at 41%, 39% from three. AB, who's really struggling, is at 39%. So the next question is Dante Exum and usage rate are the next two questions that I have. Today's show brought to you in part by Murdoch Chevy out in Woods Cross. Chevy's on fire, right? We know that. Chevy, the American brand, is on fire. And the Murdoch family have been selling Chevy for 91 years. That's like the bread and butter, like peanut butter and jelly, like the essence of like just down home Chevy and the Murdochs combined for 91 years in Utah. Chevy's got a great lineup right now. They got the heavy-duty Silverado. They got the light-duty half-ton truck Silverado. They got the mid-size Colorado. They also have the Colorado diesel. Plus, the new Traverse, three rows of seating, is gorgeous. The Equinox, the Tahoe, the Suburban, and the Trax make up an unbelievable SUV lineup. If you go out to Murdoch Chevy, you're going to see Tyson. Tell him I say hi. We've had some good conversations with Tyson. Looking forward to having a lunch coming up here with him shortly. You're also going to find out that you get the Murdoch's no-regret policy. In other words, they're going to treat you with every ounce of everything they can as a dealer to make your life better, extend their hours, give you more service time, five-day return policy, price match guarantee, car washes and oil changes for life, everything they can do to make sure you have a fabulous experience, they're going to do it. Go visit Murdoch Chevy in Woods Cross. It is, say hi to Tyson when you're there, tell him Locked On Jazz sent you, and go give him a good hello, give him a good little, oh, he's a big guy, actually. Just shake his hand and say hi. Don't give him a little punch on the side. I mean, he's not like violent or anything. He's just a big dude. All right. Usage rate. I'm trying to figure out whether or not Rodney Hood, who, when good, was good, and yet so very rarely, and Joe Johnson, who was not having a good year, is somehow not having them is hurting this team. Okay? The easy answer is, oh, of course. But, like, so why? And the only thing I've come up with is that they use possessions. Rodney was average, not particularly efficient. He got more average at the end. Joe Johnson was well below average, and our plus-minus with him on the floor was not good. Neither was it with Rodney. So why would we be missing them? Well, there's two answers to this. One is that we're not. and that we're just having a circumstance in which the ball's not falling. It looks like it. Okay. Two is that we are. And the only thing I could come up with that would answer why we would be missing them would be that they took a lot of shots. And this is an area of analysis that I've never, frankly, been great at. And that analysis is that there's just a value to having guys that have a usage rate. Usage rate is that they use possessions. And what we've seen in the last few games with the Jazz is that the turnover rate is way up. Well, is the turnover rate up because guys aren't natural shooters or scorers? And so we're trying the extra pass, and every time you pass, you're increasing your chances of turning it over. Just by definition, if you shoot, you're not turning it over. And then the extra passing is leading to more turnovers. It's a thought. You going to go with me on that? Just a thought. You can decide. Dante Exum is inching closer and closer to coming back. Dennis Lindsay said March, mid-March. I would suspect that Dante starts to play one-on-one, three-on-three here pretty soon. It's a little tricky. It's a little tricky. How do you know whether the shoulder is going to hold on contact? How do you know that Dante is going to be able to handle the contact? How do you try to put him in situations, but you're not going to have like somebody walk up behind him and just hit him. I want to say this, and I want this. I kind of really wrote this down and tried to figure out how to say it. I'm really excited to see Dante. I suspect he doesn't help us. Right? I think we get into a very complicated game of making sure Dante gets enough time, making sure we see Dante and Donovan on the floor together, while simultaneously, I'm guessing, hurting our chances to make the playoffs. This is not a criticism of Dante at all. This is a guy who has not played since April of last year. Maybe May. Like, that's a long time. And is coming off an upper body injury where you're not quite sure what's going to happen. And if we're honest about him, he's still in a huge developmental curve. He's a career 39% shooter and 31% three-point shooter. When he and Ruby are on the floor together, we got two guys who are not very good shooters. Now, Dante's worked very, very hard at it, but I don't expect that he comes in with all the speed of the game and everything and learning all of his new stuff, suddenly becomes a bona fide knockdown shooter. Post-All-Star break last year, I thought we saw a better player at times, and we moved him off the ball at times, which I thought made him look a little bit more comfortable. And during post-All-Star break, he shot 41% and 34% from three. And he took the same amount of free throws in 24 games he took in 42 games. So that was much better. But I'm curious. It was interesting. I saw somebody. I don't remember who it was. I apologize. The thing I'm most excited for is to watch Dante play. If you're, and I'm kind of right there, but I think this gets into a whole really interesting question is what is the organization's priority right now? Is it a long-term game of trying to see putting Dante out there for 20 minutes a night to get his minutes on the floor to see what it does to the, you know, how he works with other guys? Or is it to make the playoffs, in which case it might be better to play Dante? Make sure I'm being clear. I'm not criticizing Dante. I'm just I don't think Paul Millsap's return, who's an established 33-year-old multi-time All-Star, at first is going to help Denver here. And it's a pretty vital time of the year for them. Now that's different. He's a max out player. He's your multi-time All-Star. Dante, we still don't even know what his role is in the league and where he fits, and you're trying to meld him in, and I think it's going to have a negative impact. Now, in the 55 games AB has played, AB's playing 17 minutes a night, and so maybe you're giving those minutes to Dante. And AB's shooting 41% from the floor and 33% from three, and you're going to figure that Dante can do that. But it's not certain to me that Dante helps, gives the Jazz a boost. And that doesn't mean I don't think Dante's a good player. And that doesn't mean that I don't think Dante has great value to the franchise. That just means that in this circumstance, at this time, with him having not played in all the time he's played, without an established kind of game that he's still trying to discover, just who he is, all the things about it, that this is a difficult decision. And how you go about it, to me, is pretty fascinating. In other words, do you just decide, yeah, you know what, getting Dante going is a bigger item than maybe what, whether we win or not? That's not going to work. Like, Rudy's not going for that. So it's going to be really, I think this is going to be a very, very interesting time to watch this happen. Today's show is brought to you in part by my friends over at the store. The June pies are flowing off the table. So June pies are a woman who is in Heber who for a long time, this is the essence of what makes the store so great, is that there are these people in town and all around, and they find them, and then they bring them into the store. I've told you the story about the woman who makes the chips, right? That Jeff went to a wedding and had these chips and asked her, like, you know, if you make these, I'll sell them at the store. My wife says they're the greatest chips out there. And, of course, that's, you know, now we have them in the house all the time. So the June pies, I don't even know if her name's June, but let's go with it, is a woman out of Heber, Utah, and she makes these incredible shepherd's pies and Thanksgiving leftovers and these great quiches, and then the apple crumble cake and the sugar cream are our two favorites. I haven't tried the chocolate chip cookie pie, but I want to. And she makes them out of Heber, and it used to be that the only way you got them was that she, like, opened her storefront from, like, Tuesday from 1 to 4, and everybody from Park City drove to Heber to go get them. Now she's delivering them Tuesday through Friday to the store. 6200 South, 20th East. I'm at the store the other day, and what do I see? Rich's Bagels. Love Rich's Bagels. The Asiago cheese Rich's Bagel is the best. The store has it. Every little item around that's the best thing you can find in town, the store has for you. Plus, they have the great cookies that I love. The Mudslide cookie is my favorite. They usually make the Mudslide cookie every other day. I'm trying to put enough demand on them that we want Mudslide cookies every day. It's the quest in life. Mudslide cookies every day. Mudslide cookies every day. Hey, all of us have got to. There's kids. The Parkland kids are changing the world. I'm just trying to get cookies. It's kind of who I am. 6200 South, 20th East. It's the store. Also, the Ace Hardware, Cottonwood Ace, right next door to them. Got a bunch of great Easter things going on at both of them as well, if you want to prepare for Easter with gifts, goodies, cards, flowers, all the rest. It's the store, 6200 South, 20th East. All right, I watched a ton of NBA last night. It was great. Love this league. Totally great. Let me run through a few things. It was interesting. Rodney had a great fourth quarter last night, and he's had a terrible fourth quarter all year. He's been just an awful fourth quarter player, but he had a good fourth quarter last night, which was super. But boy, the first 7 minutes he was in the game in the first quarter, he never touched the ball. I mean, he never, ever touched the ball. It was crazy. Rodney, for us, in the fourth quarter, shot 38%, 29% from three, and I was nervous that was going to start happening to him there as well. Cleveland's fun to watch. Kyle Korver, George Hill, Rodney Hood, a bunch of guys you like and root for. But it was incredible to watch the way they use Rodney. So in the first quarter, Rodney Hood played 5 minutes and 30 seconds. They say he got two shots. I didn't see him. But, I mean, he is not a part of it at all. The second quarter, they open up and give him the ball on four straight possessions. In the quarter, he ends up drawing a foul, turning one over. Then in the fourth quarter, he made some plays. He went 5 of 8 playing the whole fourth quarter. So cool for him. I think that'll help him out a great deal. Kyle Korver is still an unbelievable beast to deal with and changes games with just what he does. Interesting play. I tweeted about it a lot last night. They may have done it by accident, but in a tie game with 23 seconds left, Miami fouled Ben Simmons. And when they fouled Ben Simmons, they sent him to the line. Everyone's like, oh my gosh, aghast. It's actually the right math play. If you can get a bad free throw shooter on the line in a tie game, chances are he makes one of two. You now have a chance to win the game. You had no chance to win the game otherwise. Wizards are playing better without John Wall. Yeah, he's a negative 1.7 pack player. You guys know this. Like, no, when you have another high usage player and you have a secondary high usage player that's negative, it's really detrimental. So they have Otto Porter and Bradley Beal. They're both positive pack players, and John Wall, who's not, and John Wall's out of the lineup, and they're starting to win games. I'm not stunned by this. The statistics say they're better with John Wall on the floor than off the floor, still for the season, but let's keep an eye on it. Clippers win last night 122-120 over Denver. It's a terrible loss by Denver. They allowed 41 points in the fourth quarter. They led the game by, I think, as many as 19. Clippers are interesting. They play hard. Lou Williams is a beast. Last night, Boban gave them everything. They closed with Boban instead of DeAndre Jordan. Montrezl Harrell's not bad. Every one of their players is about generally above average. Danilo Gallinari's out again. Paul Millsap back last night, played 23 minutes. They were minus 8 with him on the floor. It's going to take a little while. And then the Jokic doesn't have the ball in his hands as much. Here's what's happened so far in the playoff race. There have only been, last night was the first time that any team in the playoff race lost a game in which they had I've broken this down for those who don't know. Sorry, I was assuming you knew. Five categories, certain wins, anything over 80% on the 538 probability. So far, every team, the Western Conference teams that are in the playoffs, Minnesota, San Antonio, Oklahoma City, Denver, Portland, New Orleans, Clippers, and Utah, are 5-0 in these games. The should wins, which are 60 to 80% wins, and my point on these is they're much higher than 60 to 80% wins generally right now. And the certain wins are at like 100%. Teams just don't lose those games this time of year. And so the 538 models, I think, underestimate wins. Then I had the pick'ems between 40 and 60%, then the unlikelies, 20 to 40%, and then the no chances. My theory also is that the pick'ems are probably closer to 60, the unlikelies are closer to 50, the no chances, you really might have no chance. So far, certain wins teams are 5-0. There's none of those tonight, by the way. Pelicans and Spurs play tonight. Rockets play Clippers. And Dallas and Oklahoma City. Even that Dallas-Oklahoma City game, some reason, is at 63%. Should wins. Teams are 2-1. Denver's loss last night was the first loss by a playoff team in a should win or a certain win. Pick'ems, Utah lost that one to Houston. That was in 50% game with them on a back-to-back. This is where it gets interesting. The unlikely wins, Clippers win last night. They're now teams are now 3-2 in unlikelies. So Denver's one loss is against one of these teams. And then we haven't had any of the no-chance games yet. Remember, I predicted this out to be Minnesota 50, Oklahoma City 49, Portland 48, San Antonio, Denver, Utah, Clippers at 47, Pelicans at 46. Pelicans have stolen one. Clippers have stolen one. Denver's lost one. Oklahoma City is, just stolen one. San Antonio, New Orleans, and the Clippers have now all taken an unlikely one. All of them unlikely. What I think is also important, though, the Clippers have 11 games that are should wins, 60% to 80%. If they win 8 or 9 of those at a higher rate than that, they're a really, really bona fide playoff team. So, be interesting to see how this plays out. That's a huge win last night for the Clippers, and it's one that Denver has to kind of chew on. Denver has 12 games remaining the rest of the way. Minnesota has 12 games that are should or certain wins. San Antonio has 10. Oklahoma City has 11. Denver has 11. Portland has 12. New Orleans only has 6 left. The Clippers have 14 left and the Jazz have 13 left. So that's a huge win by the Clippers last night. That is Locked On Jazz today. Thank you very much to the store at 6200 South, 20th East. Mudslide cookies every day. Mudslide cookies every day. And brought to you by Murdoch Chevy, 4646. Oh, no, that's out in Woods Cross. That's the Hyundai address. Hope you're doing great. Thanks for tuning in. Locked On NBA is now 5 days a week. Make sure you go grab it and enjoy it. It is Locked On Jazz, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.